And so passed the weeks, the months. Bean did all his regular classwork. He attended the regular battle room classes with Dymac, teaching them how to move and shoot, the basic skills. On his own, he completed all the enrichment courses you could take at your own desk, certifying in everything. He studied military history, philosophy, strategy. He read ethics, religion, biology. He kept track of every student in the school, from the newly arrived launchees to the students about to graduate. When he saw them in the halls, he knew more about them than they knew about themselves. He knew their nation of origin. He knew how much they missed their families and how important their native country or ethnic or religious group was to them. He knew how valuable they might be to a nationalist or idealist resistance movement. And he kept reading everything Wigan read, watching everything Wigan watched, hearing about Wigan from the other kids, watching Wigan's standings on the boards, meeting more of Wigan's friends, hearing them talk about him. Bean listened to all the things Wigan was quoted as saying and tried to fit them into some coherent philosophy, some worldview, some attitude, some plan. And he found out something interesting. Despite Wigan's altruism, despite his willingness to sacrifice, not one of his friends ever said that Wigan came and talked over his problems. They all went to Wigan, but who did Wigan go to? He had no more real friends than Bean did. Wigan kept his own counsel, just like Bean. Soon Bean found himself being advanced out of classes whose work he had already mastered and being plunged into classwork with older and older groups who looked at him with annoyance at first, but later simply with awe as he raced past them and was promoted again before they were half done. Had Wigan been pushed through his classwork at an accelerated rate? Yes, but not quite as fast. Was that because Bean was better? Or because the deadline was getting closer? For the sense of urgency in teacher evaluations was getting greater. The ordinary students, as if any child here were ordinary, were getting briefer and briefer notations. They weren't being ignored exactly, but the best were being identified and lifted out. The seeming best. For Bean began to realize that their evaluations were often colored by which students they liked the best. The teachers pretended to be dispassionate, impartial, but in fact they got sucked in by the more charismatic children, just as the other students did. If a kid was likable, they gave him better comments on leadership, even if he was really just glib and athletic and needed to surround himself with a team. As often as not, they tagged the very students who would be the least effective commanders, while ignoring the ones who, to Bean, showed real promise. It was frustrating to watch them make such obvious mistakes. Here they had Wigan right before their eyes. Wigan, who was the real thing. And they still went on misreading everybody else. Getting all excited about some of these energetic, self-confident, ambitious kids, even though they weren't actually producing excellent work. Wasn't this whole school set up in order to find and train the best possible commanders? The Earthside testing did pretty well. There were no real dolts among the students. But the system had overlooked one crucial factor. How were the teachers chosen? They were career military, all of them. Proven officers with real ability. But in the military, you don't get trusted positions just because of your ability. You also have to attract the notice of superior officers. You have to be liked. You have to fit in with the system. You have to look like what the officers above you think that officers should look like. You have to think in ways that they are comfortable with. The result was that you ended up with a command structure that was top-heavy with guys who looked good in uniform and talked right and did well enough not to embarrass themselves, while the really good ones quietly did all the serious work and bailed out their superiors and got blamed for errors they had advised against until they eventually got out. That was the military. These teachers were all the kind of people who thrived in that environment. And they were selecting their favorite students based on precisely that same screwed-up sense of priorities. No wonder a kid like Dink Meeker saw through it and refused to play. He was one of the few kids who was both likable and talented. His likability made them try to make him commander of his own army. His talent let him understand why they were doing it and turned them down because he couldn't believe in such a stupid system. And other kids, like Petra Arkanian, who had obnoxious personalities but could handle strategy and tactics in their sleep, who had the confidence to lead others into war, to trust their own decisions and act on them. They didn't care about trying to be one of the guys, and so they got overlooked. Every flaw became magnified, every strength belittled. So Bean began constructing his own anti-army. Kids who weren't getting picked out by the teachers, but were the real talents, the ones with heart and mind, not just face and chat. He began to imagine who among them should be officers, leading their own tunes under the command of Ender Wiggin, of course. Bean could not imagine anyone else in that position. Wiggin would know how to use them. And Bean knew just where he should be. Close to Wiggin. A toon leader, but the most trusted of them. Wiggin's right-hand man. So when Wiggin was about to make a mistake, Bean could point out to him the error he was making. And so that Bean could be close enough to maybe understand why Wiggin was human and he himself was not.